So first, let me thank Donna for inviting me to give this talk. I'm also going to put up my title here. Spatial functions. On gapless one-dimensional systems. I actually changed my mind after sending the abstract. I'm not going to be drawing any spectral functions in this talk for the sake of keeping the talk very short. I'm going to focus on some case where we can calculate the correlation function in real time. But you can think that from there, you can just take a Fourier transform and you get spectral functions. And if you really want to see spectral functions, I can refer you to this reference. This is work done with Steve White and Ian Affleck. And so our motivation to study these time-dependent correlation functions or spectral functions. There are two motivations, basically. One was that we know that one-dimensional systems usually have very broad spectra. For instance, you can think of the dynamical structure factor spin 1/2 chains. These things are very broad because of the lack of long-range order. And usually, the spectral functions have some interesting features at the edges of some multiparticle continua. And we wanted to understand what happens near these thresholds of this continua where you can get singularities and see if we could calculate something analytically and exact, even at higher energies where you don't have effective field theories such as the Luttinger liquid theory. The other motivation was that we had some time-dependent DMIG results for correlation functions in real time that we didn't understand at the time, and we also wanted to come up with some analytical predictions for that, for those, and see if we could compare our results in detail with time-dependent DMIG results and get things right, like exponents, frequencies, and whatnot. So the general problem we were interested in here is how one calculates some time correlation function, equilibrium correlation function, which you get by taking the expectation value of some time-dependent operators here, which act on the ground state. And I would like these operators here to be something that creates a finite number of excitations in the ground state, preferably a small number. And just to give some concrete example, you could think of calculating, say, if this operator could be something that creates a single particle excitation, where you calculate things like you create a particle at a given site and remove it at another site at some later time. This could be some two-particle correlation function. Say, take the density. It doesn't even have to be in real space. You could be interested in calculating things in momentum space. Momentum Q, or you could think that you also have a spin chain, and you calculate time evolution for some spin operator. Say you flip a spin at some side j, let the system evolve, and measure this flip it back at some later time t, and basically the question here is how do these equilibrium correlation functions decay at long times? And if you understand that, then it's straightforward to get spectral information because you can just take a Fourier transform. Of this thing at long times, and that will give you information about what happens for frequencies near the thresholds we are looking at. Okay, so before I tell you what we have actually calculated to describe this long time behavior, this was one. Let me just remind you of what the Luttinger model predicts for the time decay of correlation functions of gapless one-dimensional systems. I should first say that at this point, we expect some very non-trivial behavior here because we know from Luttinger liquid theory that interaction has some very non-trivial effects in one dimension, and you're used to seeing things like non-universal exponents that depend on the interaction strength. So is that true for the time decay? In the same sense that it is true for the space decay of equal time correlation functions, basically that's the question. And for concreteness, I'd like to discuss some particular model. This kind of method is more general than what I'm going to talk about, but let's focus on some lattice model. Where these psi operators are spinless fermions, and N here are the density operators. So this is just fermions hopping on a lattice with some nearest neighbor interaction. At some fixed density. So this model has a very simple solution, of course, at the non-interacting point, where you can just solve the problem exactly. It's just a tight binding model where we know the solution. This gives you a tight binding band with a cosine dispersion. And then you construct the ground state by filling up the single particle states up to some Fermi momentum Kf. And this is the exact solution for V equals zero. If V is non-zero, there's a good starting point here, which is to say take this spectrum here and focus at low energies. So what happens near plus or minus Kf? In that case, you could approximate the dispersion here by some linear dispersion. And when you do that, you go to the continual limit and you can map the density operator onto some derivative of some bosonic field. This gives you the well-known Luttinger model where your excitations are simply free bosons related to the density fluctuations of your Fermi gas. And in that case, you can calculate correlation functions exactly because your theory is just a free theory. And the answer there is that for this particular spectral function here, let me call this g psi dagger of x and t. The answer from the Luttinger model is that So there are basically two waves propagating at some renormalized velocity v, which depends on the interactions. And the exponent of the large distance or large time decay, which is the same for x or t because of Lorentz invariance, is actually dependent on the interaction. And it depends on this parameter here, which can be expressed in terms of the Luttinger parameter in some notation for the Luttinger parameter k, which is like this. So in particular, if you're interested in the long-time behavior of this correlation function, and set x equals to 0 as a function of time, this is going to decay with some exponent 1 plus mu. So this is what the Luttinger liquid theory predicts, but is that true? So let's go back to the lattice model, where we don't linearize the dispersion, and maybe the non-linearity of the dispersion has some interesting effects. Well, in this case, we can, as I said, we can calculate time correlation functions numerically using time-dependent DMIG, and what you see there, okay. So first, let me draw some light cone. The understanding we get from the Luttinger liquid theory is that our excitations are Lorentz-like at low energies, and they propagate with some renormalized velocity v. So there is some sense in defining a light cone for these excitations. This is x equals vt. So say that you are now sitting at some position x naught, and you want to measure this g of x naught and t as a function of time. So from the Luttinger liquid theory, what we expect is that if you're sitting there, what you're going to see is some wave that comes propagating with some velocity v. So you expect some peak in the response here at t equals x naught divided by v at the light cone. So that's actually what you see in the numerical results for t less than x naught, that is in this region here outside the light cone. But what you see at larger times is that, and this thing here is in good agreement with this prediction from the Luttinger model with the Poiseuille law decay of some equal time correlation function. But for larger times, but you see that this thing starts to oscillate here with some slow decay. So this would be drawing this function along some line here. And this frequency here of these oscillations is of order 1 in units that are set the hop into 1. It dies off eventually.
Does that agree with the Luttinger's
prediction? No, it does not. Yeah, it's something else, which I'm going to explain. Basically, what this tells you is that there is another contribution here outside the Luttinger liquid theory, which we should calculate. It also looks like a low Poiseuille law decay, but with oscillations. So what is this thing? The fact that the frequency is of order 1 tells you basically that this must be associated with some high energy excitation. Maybe we're just too fast at linearizing the dispersion here at this step and restricting our Hilbert space to low energy excitations. So let's just step back for a moment and look at what happens at v equals 0 again. In that case, you don't actually have to linearize anything. You can calculate this Green's function exactly. And what you see there is basically just some integral. Over k on all the k states above the Fermi level. Right, this here now is the exact cosine dispersion. The Luttinger liquid approximation would correspond to linearizing epsilon k about plus or minus kF. That's actually one of the contributions that is important here, is that you get singular contributions from k mu plus or minus kF, which is where you cut out the integrals. That's going to give you that answer for with nu equals 0, right, at the non-interacting point. However, if you just stare at this integral for a moment, you will see that this also has another singular contribution, which is a saddle point contribution to this integral, which is where this phase here, the derivative of the phase vanishes. And that's the condition. That gives the condition that x over t equals the derivative of the dispersion at some value ks. And for the non-interacting case, the dispersion is over there, which just gives two sine of q. So you can see that if t is larger than x if you say 2t, the velocity is actually 2, I'd have to say. 2t is larger than x, then this equation here has a solution and gives you a saddle point contribution to this integral, and which is actually below above the Fermi surface. Let's look in particular at the case where t is much greater than x over in dimensionless units here. The velocity is 2 again. In this case, if you send t to infinity, the saddle point should move to the point where the sine vanishes, which above the Fermi surface is at 5 for the particle excitation. If I were talking about the whole excitation, that would be at ks equals 0. So, and what this tells us actually is that there is another contribution here coming from the region of the dispersion, which is near the top of the band. So when I'm describing the long time behavior of this correlation function, I should not only consider these low energy modes, but also these high energy modes at the top of the band. And these are very distinct from the ones at the Fermi surface because, well, here I got a parabolic dispersion. So this thing is going to scale differently with time at the non-interacting point. This is going to give us a contribution to the Green's function. So now, because of parabolic dispersion, it does not decay as 1 over t. It decays as 1 over square root t. Moreover, because it's a high energy contribution, it's oscillating now with the frequency corresponding to this energy difference between the bottom of the band and the Fermi level. Okay, so the message here is that even at the non-interacting point, the long-time behavior of the Green's function is not described by these low energy excitations. That explains why you get a picture like this, even at the non-interacting point, which you do. What you'd like to understand is how does this thing get modified where you now add interactions? Can we also predict the behavior of this Green's function?
If you would now take x0 towards 0, how would you recover the usual?
So you just shrink this part, and it doesn't actually look at all like what you expect from the Luttinger liquid theory. Just get the oscillations. There is actually a Luttinger liquid contribution on top of this, but it's actually smaller. So I should write the solution here is actually this plus this one.
I'm trying to figure out what is wrong with the naive argument that if you look at long times, you should just see low energy physics and.
Yeah.
Obviously, what you're telling us is this is wrong.
It's wrong in 1D because of the saddle point contribution, which you can see that is going to come in here. So in some sense, here long times does not mean low energies, but it's going to mean low energy scattering between this high energy particle and Fermi surface modes. It's only in that sense that I can use the approximation of long times. So which means I'm going to restrict to low energy scattering between these two bands. But I can never throw out this high energy band for the long time behavior.
Okay, so yeah, this curvature,
yeah,
it's telling us that it's oscillating piece,
so it doesn't contribute to low frequency Fourier transform.
Cool.
That's really what one really addresses.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So things like local density of state will not pick up this kind of
high frequency.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, if you were to Fourier transform, you'd filter out this kind of contribution if you're only interested in low energies. Okay, so what you have to do here now is work out some effective field theory that includes not only this high energy, these low energy modes, but also these high energy modes at the top of the band. So this could actually be done in some standard way, because if I forget about the entire band, if I just do something like this for the low energy modes, and this one here at the top, perhaps you can see where this is filled out, and that's like some empty valence band in some sense. You can maybe recognize that there is an analogy here between this problem and the problem of X-ray edge singularities, because what I'm doing here is putting some particle in some high energy band and asking how it interacts with these low energy modes here at the Fermi surface. It's of course going to scatter some particle hole pairs, and that's going to modify the exponent there. And this idea was put forward originally by Kostinik and collaborators. This paper, 06. And then I'm just going to tell you the answer. The answer that is that for V, this means function gets modified. There is some renormalization of the frequency and some exponent eta here, which depends on the interactions. And because of this analogy with the X-ray edge problem, you can actually express this exponent in terms of phase shifts. That's this high energy excitation induces at these Fermi points. And so at this point, we can actually use the fact that the model I wrote down originally, which is still there, is an integral model, meaning that it has a large number of conservative quantities, and it's exactly solvable by Bethe-Ansatz. So we actually know a lot about it. We know the exact spectrum and everything. And we can calculate these phase shifts that we need to put in the exponent. And in general, that can be done numerically by solving some set of Bethe-Ansatz equations. But there is a particular case where you can actually get some analytical results for this, which is at half filling. These Bethe-Ansatz equations that fix the exponent and the frequency can be solved exactly. And you can calculate this renormalized frequency to be 2 times the normalized velocity, there is a factor of lattice spacing that we should put in here for dimensions. And the exponent is shifted from 1/2 by mu, which is exactly the same mu that appears here in the Luttinger liquid result. Note, however, that here this exponent is related to some high energy excitation. It's not trivial that it can be related to some low energy property. Here it's completely written in terms of the Luttinger parameter. This is not expected to be true in general. It's not true away from half-filling, and it's just some peculiarity of this integral model that everything there's just one parameter essentially, and at half-filling things are very simple. You can express the exponent in terms of low energy properties.
So what's the status? You think this is a rigorous result that has a power law there, and this part. So that's the part. So this is a high energy state. Yeah.
Yeah.
And finally, by small momentum scattering events, it will finally come down in energy. And so this is for. And then it will merge with the other fermions. And so will this. Is this really the long-term asymptotics, or is this some intermediate time?
At half-filling, at least, it seems like this high energy, the single particle excitation is actually the lowest energy. The lowest energy thing you can get. You could actually decay here by some emitting some particle hole pairs that would increase the energy and give you some tail at higher energies. So what happens?
So there's one conservation law, if you like, it's momentum modulus of lattice vectors, and you see in this sector this is the lowest energy state.
Yes.
Okay, I got it.
So, but I wanted to say something about these two. It's the fact that this power law is, I expect it to be true at half filling, but not away from half filling, and the reason is that. When you are asking the question, well, okay, so is this exact or is there a correction to this thing like this? Does it decay exponentially at some longer times? That's possible and actually expected because, as I said, this is a high energy excitation. It's going to couple to some multiparticle excitations, and that could give you some decay rate for this particle. And that's expected to happen in a generic model with some generic dispersion. But
not in the
so it does happen in the integral model. That's my point that I want to make. It's the last thing I'm going to say. The idea is just simply that if you go away from half filling, say that this is now the Fermi level. What I have to show to convince you that there is a decay rate which is non-zero is to show a decay process which conserves at the same time momentum and energy. So it gives a contribution to the decay rate just from at least to lowest order in the interaction from Fermi's golden rule. And there is indeed such a process. So I'm talking about being much less than one. And this is a simple, you can say, a two-particle scattering process because it just involves scattering of another particle, which we can do like this. So say you create a particle hole excitation where the hole is exactly at the bottom, and you bring a particle up to some state above the Fermi level, and you take the symmetric excitation here to conserve momentum. So because this thing here is a cosine dispersion in this approximation, this actually has the same energy as the single particle state. And this is just a simple two-body scattering problem. It's going to give you some contribution to the decay rate, which is second-order interaction. And involves all the phase space here is that you have to scatter to some intermediate state, Q1 here, which is above KF, and this one is also low of KF. And there is some form factor here. But this thing is non-zero away from half filling. So actually, at away from half filling, this Green's function is expected to decay exponentially. And this is something you also see in the time-dependent DRMIG results, that it's well described by this kind of filling. There is, in frequency domain, there is a broadening of the single particle spectral function. And this is away from half filling. And you can see that as you approach half filling, KF goes to power over 2, the phase space for this thing vanishes. So I'll go back to what I said before and say that there is a pure parallel decay. So this is just the lowest order in the scattering that they can give you a decay rate, although we don't actually know how to calculate this thing exactly. All these other parameters have been fixed exactly by the tensors, but this one is still unknown. Yeah, so I think that's it, what I wanted to say. So just to conclude, I'll say that in order to understand this long time behavior of Green's functions in 1D, we had to learn some new tricks, and there are some interesting different things that can happen. For example, here you can get some exponential decay at long times for the single particle Green's function for not only a one-dimensional model, but it's also an integrable model. Thanks.
So if I will take the Fermi level go to the bottom of the band, so that this high energy field goes up to infinity, the phase space also vanishes, right?
Yeah, it also increases, yeah.
That's kind of its property of the latest.
Yes, yeah. So yeah, it's also an interesting question how this thing would vary with the Fermi level, like with the interaction and things like that. And this is actually below half filling because I'm talking about the part, which would be the other way around, above half filling. Yeah.
The symmetry.
Yeah, particle symmetry.
Okay. If you were not in one dimension, but you're still looking for singularities in the density of states associated with Van Hoff singularities or something. Mm-hmm. Is model of a dissipative particle will still hold, you will still get corrections to the exponents?
Yeah, so in 1D is special because the saddle point contribution actually gives you an exponent 1/2 there, which is smaller than what you get from the Fermi surface contribution. I think in general, the exponent that you get here is d over 2. Dimension over 2 for
the singularity in dimensions where it's alone.
Yeah. So, but also, of course, also in 2D, you would also get some exponential decay because it's just Fermi liquid physics. The decay rate is non-zero in general.
Other question?
So, if you had a generic model which is not integrable, do you always have the exponential?
So this kind of process. Let me just say that in general, you expect that there is an exponent here which we could express in terms of some phase shifts, which you cannot calculate exactly, but in principle, you could expect numerically or something like that. In cases like this, you also expect some decay rates, which have to be fixed in some other way. One case where the non-integral model is different from the integral model is the case, for example, in the continuum model, you can show that only that's the case you looked at. You can get some decay rate for the non-integral model, but you expect this decay rate to be zero for the integral model because in the continuum model there's nothing like this here.
Right.
This is a lattice effect.
Right.
So what's the next order decay process you can look at? That's a three-body collision, which you would expect to be absent for the integral model. So that's one difference that I can mention.
The statement was that integrability doesn't help. If there is no integrability, you expect everything to decay exponentially.
Right.
But Enrique is saying that integrability
doesn't protect everything.
Doesn't know the same. argument that this guy is stable up there, that has nothing to do with inequality. It's just a question.
It's just a just a lot of dispersion. Yeah.
It's just, this kind of happens also in the non-integrable models, that this guy up there is stable. Then you get power, then you get indeed the power laws. So that's happens also in the non-integrable, you know, in the non-integrable models.
More questions?
Well, not less than close because.